Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, relationship sanity, creating and maintaining healthy relationships, is a new book in part by our next guest, Mark Borg. He has co-written the book along with Grant Brenner and Daniel Berry. They're all three practitioners in the mental health field. They bring over 7 decades of experience of working with individuals, couples, families, and communities on how to maintain and thrive in loving relationships. They use examples from their clinical practice to illustrate how couples can meet challenges authentically and effectively and build a foundation of resiliency. Mark Borg, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I guess we start off with a vast oversimplification of what goes on in relationships. It's as though we're trying to heal the dysfunction that was perpetrated against us when we were young. I mean, it's kind of how it goes, it seems like. That's a common thread, right?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's funny you said that because I do think, you know, people, I'm a psychoanalyst, so I am working with people day in and day out. I'm also working with couples, and people, you know, will have a kind of understanding of what it is they're looking for, who it is they wound up with. And people will often say something like, well, you know, repeating patterns, winding up with my, you know, opposite sex parent, et cetera. And I, over the years of doing this, I think in a much more creative and much more optimistic sense.
Yes.
I think we're actually trying to resolve the conflict, you know, the unresolved conflict that we bring with us from childhood. So I think that when we look at it that way and we join with a partner who we want to trust and we want to love and we want to create safety, that resolving that conflict is actually a really, very, very creative and certainly fulfilling goal.
I suppose that Relationship Sanity, the book, helps us to discover the difference between resolving the conflict and, as you said before, repeating the same patterns that are actually going to keep us in the conflict.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, if anything, psychoanalysis is about, understanding what was called or what is called the repetition compulsion and figuring out whether or not there are ways that we can, you know, sort of, quote, work through whatever it is we're doing there and perhaps actually wind up with some different results.
Mark, at the foundational level of relationship and what I just heard you say, which is, you know, we're all trying to resolve issues that we carry from childhood into adulthood. And when we want to be with somebody enough, doesn't there have to be the recognition that we have this opportunity to resolve issues in this way? Because if we don't recognize it as an opportunity, we may simply see it as conflict and struggle and pain and suffering instead of seeing the bright side or the gifts that all of that could potentially bring.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, when we actually get into a model of recovery from what we call ear relationship, and that was the subject of our first book and what Relationship Sanity, the book, is meant to address and treat, the very first step in our recovery process is D from a dream sequence call, and that is discovery, that somehow or other, exactly right. You have to be able to discover that somehow or other you are playing this out, and that this isn't just your enemy that you're playing or acting this out with. This is actually someone who's a potential ally, and it is very, very difficult, I think, to reach that point, which is why we think, you know, similar to people, I think, who wind up in 12-step programs, there's a kind of a bottoming out that happens when you're in your relationship, when you're in a relationship with somebody who you don't in the least bit intend to, but you are ironically protecting yourself in this co-created psychological defense that we call your relationship from the very things that we really do want, think we want from a relationship, which is intimacy, empathy, vulnerability, and emotional investment. But it often takes couples, you know, quite a long time of, I even think of it sometimes as skidding along a bottom before they are actually able to acknowledge that, hey, you know, I am actually contributing to this problem. This isn't just my partner. That's a tough lesson to learn.
Well, and I think, you know, what you just said there at the end is so interesting because that's another step in the process. I mean, you have to recognize that this is an opportunity and something that you can work toward rather than fight against. And then I think the next step, which you just highlighted, is you have to make yourself the project and not the other person the project. Because
exactly.
What we all tend to do is blame not only the other person, but the world in general, you know, our circumstances. And this gets back to taking personal responsibility and making the focus you and doing your personal work.
Exactly. Exactly. And we even think that, you know, I mean, I working with couples, you know, I will occasionally, there are certain moments in a therapy session where I'm tempted to jump out of my chair and, you know, and shout something like, look, you have the right to take responsibility for what's wrong in this relationship. If you don't get a handle on accept responsibility for that, then this whole relationship is just something that's happening to you. It's not something that you're doing and you're not doing it with somebody. Someone's doing it to you. So we like to think of the dynamic that we're addressing as something that isn't being done to you, to me. It's something that we are doing together. So even the psychological defense, the co-created one that we call relationship irrelationship, is actually something that people are doing together, which, you know, again, when the people hit bottom and are willing to address their part in it, actually it turns from being some problem being perpetrated against you and something that's a project that you get to work with your partner to resolve.
What does that look like when that gets flipped? What does it look like to you when somebody goes, oh, I'm the project. Oh, I've bumped along the bottom long enough. Oh, I recognize this as an opportunity.
Well, considering that the primary way that this manifests is in what I think of as one of the most ironic ways possible, which is that this way of the relationship way of protecting oneself from the things we want from a relationship is actually via caring about the other person. But you're caring about the other person with such an intensity and such a force and such a volume that the care that the other person has to offer can't get in. So I think of it like a fire hose. You're like, you know, like spraying love at your partner. You're like spraying, you know, care and good deeds and all this kind of stuff. And of course, we all can feel very good and very you know, righteous, and we're such a do-gooder, and we feel so resentful that our partner doesn't appreciate us until we realize that when we're giving that at that intensity, we can't take in a single little thing that our partner has to offer us. And if we're not taking in anything that our partner has to offer, eventually the message gets through that the partner doesn't have anything good to give. Now, that's unintentional. And so what I find a lot of times is a light bulb goes off when someone goes like, you know, when I'm able to get the point across, like, stop giving, stop being so selfish, stop blocking and disallowing your partner to give anything to you.
Huh. That's a wild concept. If you're just joining us, our guest is Mark Borg, PhD. He has co-written a book with Grant Brenner and Daniel Barry called Relationship Sanity, Creating and Maintaining Healthy Relationships. There's so many different scenarios here, and you see hundreds and hundreds of them. And so I suppose you never know exactly how they're going to play out, but you have a pretty good idea. And I'm wondering about the person who has made this conscious choice and is going in the right direction to resolve the childhood conflict from whatever went on with the way they were parented. They're going along and then suddenly there's a trigger and they do that 180. And then it's like everything is disrupted. Tim brought this up a little bit, but how do those people get back on track? What kind of personal work do they do?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because the first two books, Relationship Sanity and Irrelationship, are actually written in a style, in a way that they are posed as invitations for a person who might have maybe gotten to that bottom a little bit sooner than their partner, mm-hmm. it's an invitation for them to take this insight, the discovery, and invite their partner into certain kinds of conversations. Conversations where we, as a couple, get to come into, you know, a very kind of structured discussion about our part. And not just the problem. You know, when we're talking about ownership of a relationship, when we're talking about our contribution, we're not just talking about how we contributed, how terrible it is, you know. We're also talking about how we very well might have not been able to contribute the really good things that we have to offer. So I find that when I'm talking to a couple about this, and when a light bulb goes off, and for a while, yes, you know, I hear crickets because it's, like you said, it's kind of wild stuff to think about. But after a while, you know, when people understand that we're here to actually create more room for both people in a relationship, and this kind of work is something that you really need to develop, you know, a safety and a sense of collaboration and alliance. And most people, I think, by the time they get here, have been so lonely for so long that there is a kind of a relief. So there's kind of even a little bit, I find, of a bit of a pink cloud, you know, when someone finally goes like, wow, it wasn't all you. Mm-hmm. This part of it's me, and therefore I can actually do something about it. There's power in recognizing my part in a problem. And relationship sanity is a big-time invitation for people to look at their part in it, not in a critical or blaming way.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how easy it is, and we all do this, whether or not it's in relationships with our loved ones, with our children, you know, even work relationships. We get so stuck on being right that we're often dealing with someone else who's stuck on their being right from their perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really mm-hmm. love this 40-20-40 rule that, or the tool that you put together yeah. about finding 20% common ground. That must work. It must work really well when you actually succeed in doing it.
It does. I mean, it, you know, I'll just tip my hand completely and say that it's something that I use with my wife. You know, like my wife and I, like, really, we will sit down and we will have this structured conversation about our part in it, really claiming something, you know, insight and understanding. I mean, I'll tip my hand even further and say that my wife is also a couples therapist. So we, you know, so like we're a little bit of the patient zero couple for part of this work, but. Yeah, I mean, the 40-20-40, it's an opportunity to take a conflict, an issue, or a problem, and for each person to agree to take no more than 60% accountability and no less than 40% for the issue at hand. And the result over time is this space that gets created in the 40-20-40, this 20% in the middle. It becomes a representation of a third entity. It's like the relationship itself. We call it us. And in Irrelationship, which is, you know, the first book, it there usually are two people in the relationship. One person is a performer, one person is an audience, one person looks like they're giving, one person looks like they're taking. So the 40-20-40 is an opportunity for the person who's doing all the giving to back off, you know, to not do all the giving. And it's for the person who looks like they're doing all the taking to come forward and do more giving. And so it creates the space where each person gets to take ownership of the relationship. You know, we think accountability, we think responsibility, we get rid of the word blame. And in a 40-20-40 discussion, it's actually a structured conversation where each person gets to speak, say, for 3 minutes just about their part of what's going on. They hit the timer, and then the other person speaks for 3 minutes about their part, and neither one of them are directly addressing what the other person did. What they're doing is creating a safe space together to take accountability for their relationship.
Yeah.
Mark, just recently we've had a speaker come to town as part of our Mental Wellness Alliance speaker series. His name's Brad Reedy, and his focus is on children. And Lynn just mentioned this. And what I've noticed, he wrote a book, The Heroic Journey of the Parent. And in that book, it's all about relationships, even though it's framed around parenting and children and parent relationship. And what I'm hearing in your book is that it's all about relationship. And even though you're focused on couples and, you know, that relationship, that it also transcends into other areas of our lives, probably relationships with everybody that we come into contact with. But one of the most significant and profound and powerful relationships, of course, is that between the parent and the child. So I would imagine that everything in your book is applicable across many fronts and would certainly apply to parent-child relationships.
Yes, we give examples, actually, of children who are playing certain irrelationship routines with parents. We give examples of parents and children who are resolving these issues and parents taking back, you know, certain caretaking functions and allowing their children to go back to being children. But, you know, I was asked recently, too, this question of like, hey, you know, this relationship sanity thing, obviously it's between parents, you know, it's between couples, it's between romantic partners. But what about parents and children? Is there relationship sanity between parents and children? And I said, in fact, yes, because just like we take in, you know, what other people have to offer, you know, in our adult romantic relationships, children have wonderful things to offer us, too. You know, children are constantly doing very wonderful, wonderful things and trying to contribute to, you know, to our family life, to our emotional states, and all these things in very healthy ways and in very boundaried ways. It becomes problematic when we turn the tables and we're actually kind of using them as a sort of, quote, human antidepressant to elevate our mood. But being able to let a child know how valuable their contributions are to our lives is, I think, imperative.
And how about just interpersonal relationships in general? Let's take it out of, you know, the intimate space that exists between couples and parents and children, and into just interactions with people in social settings or, you know, going about their daily business. I mean, that exists as well, or does it? Maybe it has to be in those intense spaces.
No way. I mean, look, what I think that. Friendships, if, you know, it's funny you ask, because there's actually an example in relationship sanity of a consultation that I did with a band. There was this band, and there were these guys, and they're just a bunch of dudes, and they're hanging out, but they're not getting along, and there's a lot of, they've been together for 20 years, very successful band, and they're like, oh, maybe we could use some help with this intimacy issue, and it was unbelievable to see these dudes using the 40-20-40 to create space to kind of deal with some really heavy stuff that had gone on over all these years. You know, it was like being in a relationship. And that's kind of, again, another extreme example. But, I mean, I really think friendship, you know, allowing our friends to know how much we value their contributions, that not just going out there and do-gooding all the time, but allowing good to be done for us is so important. If we can be consciously aware of the need for this give and take in all of our relationships, I think we will wind up being, to use the term, much more sane.
So did you get the band back together?
the band wasn't really threatened to be. See, the funny thing, to break apart, it's worse. See, the funny thing about your relationship is it's so terrible not because people are going to break up. Terrible because people are going to stay together in a co-created defense of isolation. See, irrelationship is a psychological defense where people commit to staying together apart. Yes. They don't ever really transact anything. They protect themselves from the things that they think they want from relationship, but they are not about to let go of it because it works, because it suppresses and dissociates anxiety for them.
And so excruciating to be lonely and alone in a relationship.
Exactly.
Before,
that's why we wrote it.
I'm wondering about the dream sequence, discovery, repair, empowerment, alternatives, and mutuality. Can you take us through that step-by-step process?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so let's use the band. So the band, you know, they get together, they discover that they're having, first of all, they had sort of a major crisis arise, you know, somebody died, and so they really felt like they, you know, were suffering, but no one was talking about it. So the discovery that this was affecting them in a way that was, you know, really impacting the way that they were relating to each other, that was the D, they discovered that. Then they used the incident, the loss of this member, as an opportunity to get into the R, the repair, and they used the 40-20-40. They did it. Each person, it's like an eight-person band. They went around. Each person took their 3 minutes. They talked about how they were contributing to what was going on and what wasn't going on in the band. So that was the R, and they used that to empower themselves to get into a much deeper discussion of how they were affected, of what kind of relationships they had over the last 20 years, of how they, you know, they did and they didn't like one another, they did and they didn't care for one another. They had a huge history, so that was, you know, empowering them to really look at their relationships as part of what, you know, drove them for all these years. At that point, they started talking about A, alternatives, ways in which they could start using these tools when things arose. They committed to actually using the 40-20-40 when problems arose between them. They had big decisions to make, financial. They were having some trouble with management. And finally, the M is mutuality, and that's what this whole thing is building up to. We're building up to a sense of reciprocity. In the case of a band, you know, all eight members, each I, me, I. There's also this third thing or ninth thing that they called us. And when they really did the dream sequence, they were able to experience an us that was, you know, it was inclusive of their whole history of being together for all these years, of all the dreads and all the hopes and all the dreams and relationships. So, you know, it was a pretty dramatic example of, you know, taking this your relationship that these guys were in and working through it together.
Really nice. Mark Borg is our guest, and the book is Relationship Sanity, Creating and Maintaining Healthy Relationships. Thanks for joining us. I like this book.
Oh, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. You too. Take care.
And